Welcome to Book Club for Movies, everybody. It's Thursday, probably September 27th, if I have to guess. I'm Ryan Miller, and he is a master of Terras Casi. It's Matt Amber.
Man, I like that they mention that in the movie.
That's what goes on the PlayStation Classic right there. Wasn't that a PlayStation?
That might have
been the only other one I played. Okay.
Yeah, I had it, and I was living with a group of people at the time, and everybody wanted to basically be Boba Fett. That was the end of it. It was a total fight about, oh, I want to be Boba Fett. Too bad, you're going to be Luke Skywalker, and shut up about it.
That game is objectively very bad, and apparently, I've not talked to anybody, myself included, that didn't just have a blast with it back then, because it was Star Wars!
Yep.
Or Leia could punch somebody in the nuts or something, kick them. Hey, this is Book Club for Movies, where we talk about movies once a week. We watch it, we talk about it. You two can too.
Count Dooku. We turned it into a Star Wars.
Just tweet us, or yeah, if it's a. Well, at least somebody did, Matt. This week we've got a movie to talk about. I'll tell you.
Yep.
It's gonna be fun. Matt, do you have a synopsis for this movie?
We sure do, Ryan. Thanks for asking. This week, we watch Solo. Solo's going to roll in at 2 hours and 15 minutes, written by Jonathan Kasdan and Lawrence Kasdan, directed by Ron Howard, starring Alden Emmerich, Woody Harrelson, Emilia Clarke, Donald Glover, and Tandy Newton. Here is your Book Club for Movies synopsis for Solo, a Star Wars movie.
Okay.
It's a movie about young Han Solo. They give him his name because he's alone. He starts smuggling stuff. That's pretty much it. Let's move on. Look, if you've
seen... You
didn't
do the voice.
If you're... I'm sorry. It's a movie about young Han Solo. They give him his name because he's alone.
Okay, I take it back. The other one was better.
Look, if you've seen Star Wars, you kind of know what this is going to be. There is no... The synopsis is legitimately Han Solo meets smugglers, becomes smuggler. Done.
It's going to be impossible not to talk about other Star Wars movies during this thing. And I mentioned that last time. We will use it as a jumping off point.
I can avoid it.
But I think it's just plain impossible to understand this thing without some Star Wars discussion. And that might seem like a ridiculous statement.
Yeah.
And I hinted at this at the beginning of the show, but honestly, and it's the weirdest thing, and I said this on the games podcast we did on Tuesday, that we do on Tuesdays, I've never been so excited to talk about a movie that I have not ever been so excited to see.
Or, I still don't think that's what you're trying to say.
Whatever I said. Go back and listen to the show.
Nice plug.
This movie is not the best Star Wars movie.
No, it's not.
In fact, maybe we go back to the trailer. This trailer
who's not
is
the
not
best
the best Star
Wars.
Star Wars trailer.
No.
And it might be a good trailer in that I believe it very correctly portrayed this movie. This is the first Star Wars movie that I haven't been like wanted to see in the theater that I kind of actively thought from the beginning, I'll see it eventually.
Sure.
And the trailer conveyed that well, and I think the movie doesn't necessarily disappoint in that, let's say.
I agree. I think this movie has a cardinal sin running against it. It's especially noticeable because it's a Star Wars movie. And this is something we're going to get into is what my cardinal sin is. But keep going.
Wow.
Keep talking. Because I want to...
pure tease. We are pure tease at
this
point.
We're teasers. Yeah. Like I said, cardinal sin here.
And well, let's go chronologically for the most part because that's how my notes go. And
sure.
I watched this 1.5 times just because not only did I not watch it this week, I watched it the week before, so I wanted to freshen up. I also wanted to understand more about what I wasn't crazy about with this thing. It's a competent movie. Maybe we talk about the history behind it. It was originally headed up by Chris Miller and Phil Lord, who did the Lego movie most of all. They also did 21 and 22 Jump Street. All three of those movies, enjoyable in their own right. Even the sequel to 21 Jump Street.
Do you have their names backward? Is it Chris Lord or is it Chris Miller? I don't remember.
Yeah, I got it up here. Phil Lord. Okay. I had to put it up for that very reason.
Because I can't remember.
I did my homework this week.
Woo!
They had the movie initially, and whatever happened. We'll never know the full story. They got let go. To some extent, the word is Disney just wasn't happy with their vision. And Ron Howard got put in and is the name that you'll see on the end of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like there are a few different movies in there.
Yep.
All of which start with him on Corellia with his girlfriend trying to escape. Like he's in a bad way. He's a street rat trying to escape his station in life. And does so while being separated from his girl, joins the Empire, becomes a soldier, who then hooks up with a smuggler that he recognizes as a smuggler, even though he's dressed in stolen Empire uniform, falls in with that crew, who does work for a gangster that has employed his ex-girlfriend, so they get reconnected, and necessitates them doing a job that they can repay for a job they failed with, and that's basically it.
Like I said, Han meets smugglers, become smuggler.
Yes, sorry, I did a worse job of.
You just reiterated the synopsis with slightly more information. So I think that I want to jump back to this really fast. You mentioned that there are multiple movies in here, and there are. And one of the things that I think stands out is you can pretty much tell where Ron Howard was. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in this movie that just screams, that's a Ron Howard shot. Maybe I'm wrong, but...
No, I agree. From what I understand, his rewrite or whatever you want to call it, was extensive. Like, Paul Bettany wasn't brought in until Ron Howard was brought in, if I understand correctly.
Right.
So, and Paul Bettany's the bad guy in the film. So there are large swaths of this thing. Yeah, it's hard to understand what they kept, but Ron Howard is all over it. Like, it's... In fact, I would say it's competently directed. Ron Howard knows what he's doing. He's made a film that you can understand, mm-hmm. that has very common tropes. In fact, this might be going against it, actually.
Yeah.
But isn't confusing at any point.
No, not even a little bit. This is not something that's going to strain the brain, even a little bit.
So, I mean, sure. Ron Howard fixed it.
Sure. All right. let's run down. Let's do this chronologically now. Let's jump into the movie and dig through this. Because there is a lot to dig through here.
Well,
or there's
from
not.
From the very beginning, I mean, there is and there isn't. Again, this is going to be fun. This will be fun. I am really excited about this. Rogue One is the first side story we got from this whole initiative thing, right? A Star Wars story. Mm-hmm. Every off year, we get kind of an off movie, it seems. But Rogue One was off in a different way because it's still one of my favorite Star Wars movies ever. And I know that's controversial. I don't know. I know you liked it as well. I don't know where it stands with you, but...
Yeah, huge fan. I really, really like it.
It
is... It's the only Star Wars movie I own on Blu-ray.
Well, remember when it came out and there was no crawl? And that was a huge thing. Like, oh man, there's no crawl. Like, this is such a different Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
This movie doesn't have a crawl, and then for some reason substitutes it with 10 lines of subtitles at the very front, explaining what's going on. So it's like there's no crawl, but there's a crawl, and it's just absolutely indicative of the entire thing. Like from the get-go,
yep,
it's got two minds of it, you know, minimum, and the mind it chooses is just, what was the terminology you used? Flat out meh.
Yes, it is. It's flat out meh.
And that's how the movie starts. So.
I admit, I think that Corellia, as they pan into it, Corellia looked great. The city looked great. It looked like kind of how it was always kind of described in my head. And so I thought that the location for where Han starts out, that fits where Han's from.
I mean, overall, the movie looks good.
Looks fine.
And they seem to go for something different because there's none of the clean lines of the other movies. Like even Rogue One, which was doing a very kind of analog version of that, kind of doing a throwback, mm-hmm. they still used very... evocative or clean, you know, the Empire, the all the buildings on what was the freaking sand planet,
Serif,
yes, looked like they were, you know, Empire buildings.
Right,
this, the Empire is just caked in mud 24/7, you know, like the whole war scene, everything's dirty just all the time.
And I mean, and to be fair, the Empire doesn't really play a huge role in this movie.
They don't. No,
they are kind of a persistent
presence.
They're a persistent presence, but they're very rarely like they're not the driving force in this movie. They're just part of the galaxy.
They don't drive anything. Yeah.
No.
I mean, the characters try to tell us that it does, but it doesn't. I mean, the movie tries to tell us that Paul Bettany does, and he doesn't really either. It's all just the meh asterisk is on everything we say. Let's from here on out. Let's go with that, I guess.
Right.
So he does get separated from his girl. He does join the Empire, and this, for me, is the beginning, and it's very early on in the movie. So this is the beginning of what I think they're trying to do with this character, because essentially it's a character study. They're trying to tell us a story about Han Solo, about how he became... I don't know. Again, I don't know what the Phil Lord, Chris Miller version was. I don't know what their vision was. And honestly, I don't know if I would have trusted it. Like 21 and 22 Jump Street are, like I said, funny movies. The Lego movie, I love, but I don't know... if I trust them with this. Like, if they turned in a Star Wars movie in that style of all those other movies, like, I would have been less into that than I was into this, possibly.
Yeah, sure. I can see that.
So I'm kind of torn still.
I mean, I'm not torn on it because it's nothing. We're never going to know about it. It's a non-existent thing. So it is what it is. There's just chunks of this movie that do not feel like Ron Howard. Like, there are just like, and I don't think he did them. I think that they were still things from that Miller Lord cut.
I'll shut up, please. What do you got? Like, give me.
I can't even give you things because I would have had to take notes every scene and said, oh, this feels like Howard. This feels like Lord Miller. This feels like, it was just throughout the movie. It permeates that you get this Ron Howard movie and it just feels like Ron Howard. And then there's a scene that's like, oh, that's, it fits in the movie. I understand why it's here. It doesn't feel right.
I mean, to be honest, I don't know if I would have chosen Ron Howard for a Star Wars movie.
No, I would not have chosen Ron Howard. Ron Howard, great filmmaker, has made some good movies. I don't want him making Star Wars.
That's it too. I mean, you know, they needed a name to kind of
fix it,
to overrun the news about them firing the first two guys. So Ron Howard is that. You know, who else do you get? Spielberg? Again, I don't know if I'd even get Spielberg to do a Star Wars
movie.
We
wouldn't want that either.
We got J.J. Abrams.
Hey, you know what?
We're halfway there.
Maybe they called George Lucas.
Well, that would have quashed the news, Matt.
Mm-hmm. Would have made it better. All right, so let's keep going here. Let's keep moving.
Okay. So what I was going to say is, when he does join the Empire, we kind of get the first of many in this movie where they try to do a character study about Han Solo. They try to show us, I guess, again, how he became who he is. And he walks up to the Imperial officer. He's like, hey, I want to join the Navy, or I want to be a pilot.
I want to be a pilot
is what he says. Yeah. And he's like, well, that would be the Navy instead of the infantry or whatever he calls it. But we don't usually do that. And he's like, whatever, I'm going to be a pilot. I'll be the best darn pilot or something, whatever, whatever. And the Empire guy is impressed. He's like, huh, I don't hear that every day. He's like, okay, I'll sign you up. What's your name? Han. Okay. What's your last name? What's your clan? Whatever. And he's like, I got nobody. I'm alone. And he's like, Solo, Han Solo.
So
he gets his name from the Empire.
So dumb.
Because he's alone.
So dumb.
You know, the George Lucasian way of explaining things to death.
Giving him that name is akin to midichlorians.
Exactly. Like that, we know that's his name because he is a lone wolf. That's the obvious, non-subtle. That's the George Lucasness of that thing. We don't need it spelled out, man. Doesn't add anything to it. That takes away from it.
Apparently we do.
Somebody did.
And no, super. That was one, like, not only was that just really poorly done, it's groan inducing. You know, you watch that and Solo. Oh, come on. You gotta be kidding. And that happened so early on that I texted you. I texted you almost immediately. And I was like, I know what this movie is now. And I did. I was right. I was not wrong.
And that doesn't stop is the problem. Like, that is a common theme. And that keeps happening. He gets his gun, his signature gun, from Woody Harrelson, who becomes his mentor in a way.
So I actually have notes about this. There are three things, actually four things in a row here that I appreciated. I liked when we first see the stormtrooper, we see him as a trooper. He actually, like, the costumes, you see, they did a really good job of keeping in time with like where this would be in the timeline. So
Empire in the trenches.
Lots of familiarity with what things look like. Stormtroopers still pretty much look way closer to what they look like in A New Hope.
All the helmets are like a cross between World War One and Stormtrooper helmets.
The other group that Han joins, and they look like World War One, these weird World War One kind of outfits. They're all grimy like you were talking about. Really, really like that. I actually really like Chewie's introduction, like his entrance, the way they brought him in and how that happened. I really did. I thought that was good.
We'll come back to Chewie.
And I liked how he got the gun because it is.
Really?
The gun is only iconic because it was Harrison Ford having that gun. That's all he ever had.
Yeah, sure. It was made iconic after the fact.
It was made iconic after the fact. I kind of like the fact that it's not an iconic weapon, that it was just a piece of another gun that Woody Harrelson disassembles and here, take that. as like it's a passing thing where he's like, it is the best gun you're gonna get right now. And the fact that I really enjoyed that, because it becomes something that Han now makes iconic. It wasn't iconic before that. You know what I mean? And maybe that's stupid, but I liked it.
No.
I thought the handoff was good.
I won't tear that down, obviously. I could have liked it if it didn't fit with every other idea in this movie. He gets his name from an Imperial Guard.
Sure.
He gets Chewie from, I mean, and again, I will not get upset for discarding extended universe stuff, but the idea was always that he was with Chewie because Chewie owed him a life debt or something.
From saving him from getting killed by the Empire, basically.
Yes, which is fine. I get that maybe that doesn't happen. And we will get into Chewie, and that's maybe the least of it here because of what they do with Chewie.
Do.
But the dice he gets from a stolen speeder, you know, like
that, just yeah,
that everything just that is his, that's a callback, that they want to be attached to what that character is given to him, is tossed to him.
Well, and I mean, and they go out of their way. Like at the very beginning, he totally does the move that he does in Jedi, where he flips the ship sideways and cuts through a really thin area. Everything he does, everything in this movie is done by Harrison Ford in the other movies in some way. There is next to nothing original here at all in the film. It's like they watched Star Wars, Empire, and Jedi, and maybe some of the Force Awakens, and said, okay, he looks like this when he does this, he does this, he does this. Great. Let's take all those things. Let's throw them back in time. Let's change it up. We'll remix it just a tiny bit. There we go.
And it's not hard to envision a world where that was their, you know, after scrapping a movie halfway through and firing the directors, that this was their game plan after that. You know what? Do the surest thing. I don't care. You know, like, get it out. This can't take extra time. It needs to be something that might be more middle of the road, but that more people, you know, lowest common denominator type stuff. Give them what they want, basically, you know? Sure, that's not hard to envision, but it doesn't land. And because it is given to him, and maybe it's where they decided to come in on the character, because I feel like, and again, I'm still not sure about this, they wanted to show us how he became who he was, but there's zero of him there. Like, we get none of the character from A New Hope, even with all those actions.
Absolutely. He's not sardonic. He's not sarcastic. He doesn't play off that he's in it for himself at any point. He is the most, okay, here we go. I got to say it. Cardinal sin this movie encompasses, and it's encompassed with that character. It is the most generic movie ever. Like, this is not, it's not even, I'm not saying generic Star Wars, I'm saying this is a generic,
and you could say it's a generic
this
Star
is a
Wars,
generic sci-fi movie that happens to have characters you know names of. That's it. Like, there is nothing, there were a ton of moments where Emmerich totally calls, he channels,
is that
Harrison
how you say
Ford.
His last name, the character,
yeah,
or sorry, the actor,
Alden Emmerich, he channels Harrison Ford. Like, there are moments where he has the right look, he has the right smile, but it's hit and miss, and it's not throughout the whole movie, and everything else about the character is just not there. It's non-existent. Personality is not right here. The character was written as very much so as a happy-go-lucky protagonist. That's not Han Solo.
Yeah. And
even at the end of his life, even in Jedi, he's still not happy-go-lucky. He's still very sardonic about things.
Yeah. And I mean, I will say this once and I'll leave it. Turns out Harrison Ford is literally inimitable.
It's true.
Okay. I cannot hold that against Alden Emmerich. Alden Emmerich? Why does that sound like, sounds like the freaking director. Who am I thinking about?
You're thinking of Roland.
Roland Emmerich. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So,
Godzilla,
the great director of disaster movies,
yeah, Godzilla,
has made another, it seems. No, but yes, Harrison Ford, okay, I can't hold that against him too much.
No.
But you're right, the writing doesn't do him any favors, and it didn't land. It doesn't make it. And getting now just to the character and how it's written, he's a complete follower.
Yeah.
He is just a complete follower. And Harrison Ford from every other movie, Han Solo from every other movie, is not that.
He's not.
when Woody Harrelson pulls that thing out, I want him to be like, oh shoot, is that the DL-44 heavy blaster pistol? You know, like I want him to have done some of the work, you know, to be kind of a fanboy in that way. Because, okay, here's some good. There are times, and the most obvious time is 30 minutes before the stupid movie ends, so it's way too little too late. But there's a conversation between him and the love interest, Emilia Clarke, Game of Thrones. we're going to get in trouble someday by referring to people, not only not by their character names, but by the title of the movie.
Oh, yeah?
Okay, sorry.
Is Payback going to come and get us? Is Die Hard going to come get us?
Fair enough. There's a conversation with her 30 minutes before the movie is over where he is all bravado and he's like, I'm an outlaw. He might even say those words.
He does. No, he absolutely says, I'm an outlaw.
And she looks at him and says something along the lines of, no, you're not. Like, I know exactly who you are.
Yep.
In that moment, that's the movie I wanted. Like, okay, show me that Han is a wannabe, sure, but they don't even get that far for the majority of the movie. He's just a complete, not that I can now define the difference between a follower and a wannabe, but he doesn't. Like, a wannabe would know the name of that gun, what that gun is. Like, I need to see some Han Solo deep down and immediately in that character.
Yes.
And not the stuff that they gave us. Not the smirk or the stupid dialogue that he has between, because that's the most obvious spot at the beginning where he's trying to talk his way out of that first confrontation.
So
it's
bad.
So Han Solo. It's so hard to be Han Solo that it's not, you know?
Yeah.
And we don't get that. The character is just not there. Nope. At a molecular level, you know?
No, and you know, I agree with you to a point. I think that Han being a wannabe or a follower, whichever you kind of read it as, I don't think that's a bad thing. But what I think is the problem is that, especially as a follower, he was never at any point vocal. Like, he doesn't say anything. He doesn't ever have an idea that's actually, like, you know, the one time we see the actual brash Han Solo, we see it one single time. And it's like, he learned the lesson, so he won't do it again. And it's the moment where he steps out and he tells Woody Harrelson, don't worry, I got this. And he's going to step out and fight the marauders.
Right.
That's it. And then as soon as he's like shut down by the marauders, he kind of backs up and he goes, oh, sorry, didn't work out. That whole sequence, totally Han Solo. We get nothing outside of that. There's nothing.
And in a way, Woody Harrelson's character is a bit handicapping because he is the mentor. And you can tell, like, this movie very purposefully tries to set up these two warring smuggler factions. Han is a part of one with the guy that he mentors, Woody Harrelson. And there's another one that, again, we're going to spoil this thing and it doesn't matter, ends up being freedom fighters. They end up being a band of rebels that's trying to fight the evil, you know, gangster and stuff like that. So I can very obviously see this movie being like, okay, here's the two sides of Han. You know, is he going to be this type of smuggler or is he going to be this type of smuggler? It's the eternal Han dilemma, right? It's the one we get from the very beginning. But you don't even find out that they're freedom fighters until the end. That's a third act reveal.
Yeah.
So there's no push and pull. Like, there's no him trying to decide which side he's going to join during the movie until the end when, he has to make a decision. But even then, it's muddled because you're like, well, we're just watching him make the same decision he made in A New Hope. Like, if they really wanted, and I don't want to armchair this stuff, but if they wanted a freaking killer movie, they would have empired this thing. They would have given us an Empire Strikes Back of Han Solo movies where at the end the girl dies, there's no resolution, and he is embittered. And that's that's the freaking smuggler we come into. Yeah, he's already smirking by A New Hope, but he's, you know, this is, I don't know, 500 years later. But yeah, give us an empire where we really find out why Han is, like, does shoot first. We really find out where, and there's a freaking hint. Did you?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They didn't go far enough, and
no,
thank you, because I would have burnt my computer at that point.
No, absolutely. It's the guy talking to him, and then he just shoots him. Just off screen, just goes bang.
Which I like, but yeah, gosh, it's so conflicting again. But they don't give us that. They don't give us Han shot first by the end of the movie, even though he shoots first. You know, contradicts, like, what...
No, I agree.
You should say whatever you're going to say.
I will say that there was one moment that is a total throwback to New Hope, And it's something we never really see. We only hear about it. And that's, we do finally get to see Chewbacca rip somebody's arms off. I mean, you don't get to see it, but he does yank the arms off and then he's standing there holding them. And Han kind of looks at him like, what the hell are you doing?
There are good moments. And please, let's lead it with Chewbacca. Keep going. We said we come
Chewbacca,
back.
Chewbacca, MVP. MVP of the movie.
There are two things about this movie that I will defend. One of them is Chewbacca. Not that it's a perfect treatment, but number one, Chewbacca has agency in this freaking movie.
Yes, he does.
And it's glorious to see him take charge and do stuff. And because in the later movies, he does, but it's kind of like comic relief-y. Like, he's never actually calling the shots. Han is, and Han's a stronger character, and I guess that makes sense. So maybe that flip works here because he's not quite Han yet, but...
I do love that Han knows a little bit of Wookiee language.
Yeah. In fact, how they come together is pretty good. I mean, you might have mentioned that already.
Yeah, I did. I enjoyed it. I enjoy seeing, like, there's that whole sequence where they meet each other. They're gonna try and get out. And then he sees, they see down a hallway a whole bunch of Wookiees being beaten and pushed through, like, to a spot. And that's kind of the defining moment for both Chewie and Han. Han kind of runs off for a minute. Chewie goes that way, and then he realizes, I need to go help him.
Right.
And I think that was the moment where they become connected for the movies that we see here on out.
And there are lots of good moments with them together. Again, Chewie brings a lot to every scene, I think, actually.
100%. When I say MVP of the movie, I'm not kidding. We can talk about Lando. Lando was a good character. He wasn't great.
We can talk about Lando. I want to give Chewie his due still. And I know you mentioned this part too. This was a text I got from you. When they do finally get together, you know, everything happens that the co-pilot's gone and the actual pilot's gone. So it's Han and Chewie in the seats in the Millennium Falcon. That moment landed for me 90%. Like, that was like, okay. And maybe it was the music at that point. I don't know. It all came together well at that point.
And I even wrote it down. I smiled really big when Han and Chewie sit in the cockpit for the first time.
Yeah, that was the text. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was good. The thing that I also have written down here, I was really annoyed because I liked Han and Chewie, but it was so generic and blah for so much of it that every moment Chewie's on screen with him, like, they're it's a better movie. It's still just not that good.
Maybe that's what I'm feeling. Yeah. Like, it definitely elevated stuff, but you didn't.
But you elevated it from meh to,
right.
Eh.
Okay. Maybe that's it. I was so excited to get something at that point. I was like, okay.
And I want to, we can keep going on Chewie.
I'm good.
Bring okay. I want to quickly, before we jump to Donald Glover, before we jump to Lando, I want to get this out of the way. I want to get the Kiara character, the Kira. I'm not sure. It was Q-U-apostrophe-I-R-A, I think, or Q-U-I.
Sure.
I don't know. Amelia Clark.
Why do you think I call her Game of Thrones?
Yeah, Amelia Clark. Fluorescent light.
Oh, really?
In everything.
Turn it in for you? Okay.
She did this Terminator, like the little bits I've seen out of Salvation or whatever it was. No.
Oh, was she in Salvation, really?
I think so. Yeah, whatever the most recent one was. Or Genesis. She was in Genesis.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, shoot. She was Sarah Connor, wasn't she? Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
I have blocked that movie out for so many
Correct.
Reasons.
She is... It's just Amelia Clark. That's all she ever is on screen. She's not Kiara. She's not the Queen of Dragons, the Mother of Dragons. She is, to me, an extremely lesser version of Rachel McAdams. Which, you know, fluorescent light for you.
Fluorescent lights where some people see it flicker and others do not. She is a fluorescent light. We're both seeing the same thing here, though, I think. And I think, I guess maybe what I'll say is that I think it's more a lack of chemistry. I don't think her and Roland Emmerich come together very well.
I would love to say that, but I've watched Game of Thrones for 5 seasons.
Fair enough.
Look, I take nothing away from her. She is making the moves. People like her. I don't think she is a good actor. That's just it. She's very meh. And all she does is, it does seem like I almost feel like she came from like a soap and never gave up acting on a soap. Like, everything has to be overdone. And she has these things where she, what?
I don't know. I don't see the overacting. I see it kind of just under, like, all played at the same level.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think she overacts, and she's doing that badly because she's not a good actor in the first place. That's what I'm trying to say.
Gotcha. Okay. Is Donald Glover a good actor?
Matthew Donald Lambert. Glover is a good actor. Donald Glover got boned in this movie. I'm not kidding. Like, not visually. I mean, he's not boned in the movie, but he got boned by that script. Here. His introduction, pretty good. Pretty good. I like that. That first scene where they're playing cards, and I don't remember what it is. It's not Dejarik. It's Sabacc. Playing Sabacc.
Sorry.
Everything else, he's just underutilized. Same thing. Donald Glover got the same treatment for me that Tandy Newton got. You have Tandy Newton.
Oh, do we
terrific,
even mention Tandy
terrific
Newton?
Actor. My completely gosh. Underutilized in every respect.
Like, so severely underutilized, because not only was she underutilized, it was a heist that was supposed to set up the two warring smuggling factions, but it ultimately, it just was so, seemed unmotivated and just not driven. And then Tandy Newton seems to be in on that, because she gets up on a tower and is like, well, I can't get out of here in time, so I'll suicide so that you can still steal the fuel. Like, she's not even on the freedom fighter side. She's on the complete, and she's in love with Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
So she's like a nihilist for no reason, for the side that has no motivation. Like, if she were a freedom fighter and was like, okay, I'm going to suicide on this thing because the job needs to be done because, you know, poor people need their food or something like that. Now, she's like, whatever, I love this dude, and I guess I want to make sure he can steal it. So
it's just such a waste. She's in the movie for 20 minutes.
What the heck, man? Yeah,
and I feel like, I feel like Donald Glover was underutilized in a very similar fashion.
He was. I think maybe everybody was.
He gets more screen time, but it's minute. And I'm not even going to lie, man. I never expected the way he loses to Falcon like that, and I didn't like it. I didn't mind the fact that he's a cheater, because Lando, he's Lando. I'm okay with that.
He cheats at Sabacc, because that's the everybody knows that the Millennium Falcon goes back and forth in whatever the poker game is. Do they call it Sabacc in the other
Sabacc
movies? Okay.
I don't know. They never talk about it. It's okay. Not brought up. They just say he's gambling.
So that's in there, but Han does not win it right away because Lando cheats, but then he still gets recruited for the job somehow. I can't even remember what reasoning they come up with. But then Han...
Oh, because Han said... isn't that where Han says we could do the Kessel run in less than 12 parsecs?
But that's not motivation enough for Lando. They give him something else that makes him okay with it or something. I don't know. I agree that he's underutilized. I like Donald Glover. If anybody doesn't like Donald Glover, my gosh, that guy is... This isn't his best work, but that says absolutely nothing, because his best work is phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, his best work is 30 Rock, so what are you going to do?
Was he on 30 Rock?
He wrote for 30 Rock when he was like 21.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, before Community even. But he's basically doing a Billy Dee impression. He's doing a good one.
Does a good one.
I probably still would have rather have seen a Lando movie,
yep,
than a Solo movie.
Yep.
My favorite parts are kind of just two things, though. It's him, period, the character, and it's at the end. If you want me to, I'm going to spoil the best part of the movie.
Spoil it up.
At the end, and this is the last contact they have, because I will say they do okay with the relationship between Han and Lando, because remember when they first meet each other, Han's not sure if Lando's going to hate him or love him, and they basically need to set that stage. They need to set a relationship where they do kind of, you know, aren't necessarily friends.
Right.
And I think they do that pretty well, and it culminates in the ending of Lando's scenes where they've gone through all they've gone through, and it's by the seat of their pants, whatever, and Lando or Han says something to Lando, and Lando says to Han, I hate you, and Han says, I know. I laughed out loud. It, in a way, it's in keeping with all their other stupid things in this movie, but it got me. Maybe they just wore me down at that point. I don't know, but
I think
they left the relationship at a good spot, even though they put a stinger on there that I didn't need, where he wins the Falcon back, which I guess they technically needed it, but didn't need it for the movie and shouldn't have done it. But that line made me laugh. There you go.
Not so much.
I love that we can both not like this movie, like some things about it, and still disagree on those things. If that just isn't emblematic of this whole thing, man.
Yeah, I did not like that. One of my issues with that relationship is that it is built in such a way that it's like you're building a Lego house and you're you've got one stacked here and then one stacked here and you're going up, and then you just skip a bunch of pieces and the other pieces are floating.
So they should have kept Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
Maybe, but what my issue is that they have it, the relationship they have is minute. I always thought it would have been a little bit bigger of a relationship, a little more than what we got.
No, man, because think of how they meet. But the
thing is, like, when they meet in Empire, it feels like they're old friends that just don't trust each other because they just don't know. This doesn't make them old friends. This makes them barely acquaintances, man. Like,
I just didn't like it.
It didn't work for me. To me, it doesn't set up that meeting in Cloud City well enough.
I can't disagree with you, but it's definitely enough for me to explain. Yeah, I mean, I can't blame anybody for their critiques of this movie, but it does set up that meeting for me later. Again, probably without the stinger would have been better, but
yeah, hey. Stinger. We ignore that.
I'm spent. Yeah, I don't know if you got anything else.
The one I do want to mention one other sequence, and it was a big sequence where they are on a train and they're on the outside of the train. They're on the inside. Like they're bouncing
around. That's the first heist that we just talked about where Tandy Newton dies.
Yes. So one of the things in particular about that sequence that just makes it so difficult is that it's a mess. It's
really,
there's nothing driving any of it.
Well, plot wise. No, I completely agree as a sequence.
Yeah.
I will credit Ron Howard here. That's a thrilling sequence. Like, that's a fun.
Oh, wow.
Because the train's going sideways and they're hanging off the side of it. I mean, yeah. None of it's motivated by anything, and there's not, like, everything around it is dumb, but the mechanics of it I thought were pretty good. Like,
yeah,
I was
didn't,
into that.
No, didn't work for me. That to me, that whole sequence was just a mess. It looked like, to me, it looked like a mess of scenes that they went, okay, we're just going to mush them together because it all takes place in the same spot, and that's fine.
Everything thematically and plot wise that sequence tries to do is dumb. Like there's a moment where the actual pilot dies and they try to freaking, in fact, there's a line where the original pilot dies. So Han has to take over for him. And all he's doing is like they're attached to a thing. He's just flying in a straight line and it's a big bulky spaceship. Like he's not doing tricks or flips or anything. He's literally just holding it steady while everybody else does their stuff to kind of get the payload. And the dying pilot looks over to him and is like, well, I'll give you this. You sure are a hell of a pilot. And I'm like, based on what? He just kept it going in a straight line for as long as he could. And he seems to be struggling with that a whole lot, too.
Yeah, I'm not real sure. Yeah, and that pilot was weird that he was an alien pilot that is like, he's part of the crew. And then
character
he's
didn't
dead
land.
Right away.
It was like, we can't get...
Tandy Newton, dead right away.
Can't get Alan Tudyk, so we'll put this guy in here. And it didn't... No, it didn't.
See,
actually, you know what? I'm not spent. I have two more things about this movie.
Okay.
We haven't done The Last Jedi yet, but I have a note in my Last Jedi thing that says Poe and BB-8 are lovers.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Accurate.
Boy, do they triple down. Like, I didn't think they could double down on that any more than they... Like, I thought they overdid it in that movie. In this movie, like, Lando is straight up, like, there's just a lot of hand-wringing over the droids when they die. And it's funny because the droid herself talks about having a relationship with him and how it would never work. And her personality is fun. They
completely underutilized also.
Yeah, it's Phoebe Waller-Bridge who does it. L337,
She's Leet.
Leet. Oh, crap. Jeez, come on.
Yep.
IMDb is wrong.
It is not. It is not.
The world is wrong.
Yes, that is correct.
But yeah, she dies and Lando, like, basically they don't mince any, like, there's an actual relationship. It's just, it's too far. I don't get what Star Wars is doing in their whatever. Don't kink shame. And then at the end, this is the movie. Like, Rogue One was a beautiful, just one off, right? This is the movie they give us cliffhangers for. Like, Darth Maul is the guy behind the scenes? Is the guy behind Paul Bettany?
He's Dryden Voss's boss, who also happens to be working directly with Emilia Clarke, who is a bad guy.
At the end, Warwick Davis takes off his helmet, and he's been in the movie the whole time.
Yeah.
This is the movie you give us cliffhangers for. You're going to do another one of these.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe go back and do less of this one.
Yeah, don't do any more of it, I would say.
That's all I got. That I am truly spent.
All right, let's move on. We finished it out. That was Solo, A Star Wars Story.
10 stars.
If you out of 58, Book Club, the number 4 movies on Twitter. Let us know what you thought about it. We're curious. I would love to know what anybody else felt about
it. We could keep
going.
Give us more fuel. Yeah, you'll regret it. We'll love it.
Next week's Book Club for Movie Selection is going to come at you on Netflix. It is called Kodachrome, starring Jason Sudeikis, Ed Harris, and...
Elizabeth Olsen, actually. Scarlet Witch.
And Elizabeth Scarlet Witch Olsen. This movie is streaming on Netflix right now, so you guys can watch that. You can check it out there. Hit us up at bookclubformovies.com. You can find it there. You can hit us up on Twitter. You can podcast at bookclubformovies.
Podcast@bookclubformovies.com if you want to email. And thanks to Adam for this suggestion. Adam Parkin, friend of the show.
That's right. We listen to people. We take suggestions. Mm-hmm. Now, though, let's just do the rest of the show.
Okay. So we've watched other movies that you just need to mention. Why don't you go first this week? I cut you short last week on Mandy, no less.
Yeah, that was a poor decision.
I'm going to make it up to you.
with a movie that is not nearly as mind-bending as Mandy.
Does such a thing exist?
I don't think so. All right, I watched one movie this week. That movie was Spotlight. It comes in at 2 hours and 8 minutes, written by Josh Singer and Tom McCarthy, directed by Tom McCarthy, starring Michael Keaton, Mark Ruffalo, Rachel McAdams, Liev Schreiber, and John Slattery.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about Liev Schreiber.
He's a huge part of the movie, and he's great. He's freaking great. In fact, everything about this movie... freaking great. I'm annoyed that I did not watch this sooner.
Pretty good.
If you're unfamiliar with the film, it's a movie about the Boston Globe in the early 2000s where they found printed a whole bunch of information indicting the Catholic Church because they found 90 or 80 plus Catholic priests that were sexually assaulting minors.
Right. They broke the story, essentially. This was ground zero? Were there some trickles? I can't remember.
They actually mention it in the movie that some of this stuff had come up, but it literally, that was the joke I made earlier, it got pushed to Metro and it got buried in nothing.
Now I get it.
Yeah. So there had been information out there. Nobody saw it because it was buried in a part of the paper that just wasn't being read very much. Spotlight.
So it's got the subject matter, but man, does it execute on it though, I think.
It does. It kills it. Spotlight is the actual name of the section in the Globe that focuses on very specific things. And the way it's explained, Michael Keaton is kind of the editor of that section. And he explains that Spotlight is something where every couple of months they figure out what story they're going to do, but it takes them years. It could take them up to a year to finish a story because they want to make sure they have everything.
I love that part too, because it's so something, I mean, something that you probably do see nowadays that does still happen nowadays, but that is like openly attacked by people nowadays, you know, like
investigation
with the advent. Yeah. Actual reporting or journalism.
Yeah.
With the advent of social media and presidents.
so it does a really good job of that, and the movie itself does a really good job handling the subject matter, and I think there are a number of sequences where they're talking to victims or they're discussing what happened with a priest or somebody in the clergy, what have you, and it's handled really well. I have to imagine that, you know, Mark Ruffalo's got a background. He was in Zodiac as a as a reporter. So a couple of these people have that background of being in that kind of thing. I have to assume that they talked to some of the people from the Globe.
Oh yeah,
and got that, because every one of them, and I know Rachel McAdams is a fluorescent light for you. I can't see it.
I forgot she was in it.
Yeah, because fluorescent light. And I thought she was terrific in this. And
sometimes I just don't see her at all.
Liev Schreiber ends up being the... So they do... There's an interesting arc here. And they do... Tom McCarthy does something really interesting with these characters. He makes it feel like John Slattery, who is higher up on the food chain than Michael Keaton, but he's not the actual editor. The actual editor is the very opening of the movie, is retiring and getting replaced by Liev Schreiber. They did a really, really good job of making it out to feel like John Slattery is not on their side, where he's kind of opposed, and maybe he's maybe the Catholicism in him doesn't want to talk about this.
Right.
But at no point does he ever sandbag the thing. He goes out of his way to make sure that they're not wasting their time and that the work is getting done. But it's done in such a way that you can feel like that character knows what's coming, and he knows it's not going to end well. And he just, right. he's throughout the movie, it feels like he is starting to just build up walls. And when they finally are at the very end, they're like, we got it. We have this. I think he's still at the point where I don't know what the fallout is going to be. And the Liev Schreiber character does this great job being kind of a balancing act to that, where he is really hard on everybody and really wants them to do good work. But he's also the one that comes in and says, this is a major story. Why is nobody talking about it?
Right.
Why? Yeah. And without him, and he, you know, he's brought in. And again, you think he's going to come in and be, at odds. And he is at odds on some level, but he balances all of this stuff out really well. And he's like, I love that he's the one that says, well, we're not going to sue the Catholic Church, but we're going to file a motion that makes them unseal the documents so we can read them. And if we have to sue them, then I guess we do.
Right, right.
You know, it is a top to bottom. It's 2 hours and 8 minutes, and that flew by. I was so invested in that story. And I remember the papers coming out. I remember it being a big deal. For how long now?
Everybody.
It's been 20 plus years. It's been 20 years now. And the jokes are still being made because it's still happening.
There's been like another flare up. Are you kidding? There's been another flare up of reporting, I should say, even. I mean, obviously, right. This thing has not gone away.
And it won't. It'll probably never go away. And the disappointing thing is that it won't go away because the church won't
go away. Yeah, right. That too, man. They're still apparently, good gosh.
And this movie does a really good job highlighting what was going on. And when they get to the statistics, which they got directly from, they got the actual stats and they bring them up in the movie. It is insanity. It's
freaking nuts, man.
How many people were impacted by this? And there's at the very end of the film, they do the black screen with text on it because there was more to it.
The story's not over, man. Yeah.
And they said in there that something like over 1,000 people called into the Globe when the story ran. So they ran the story, and in the spotlight section, they put a phone number and said, call this number if you were abused, if you have a story to tell us, and it's going to ring directly to us. Their offices were blown away. Get a sequence where Mark Ruffalo is walking back into the office. I think it's Ruffalo, and nobody's there. And somebody says, go to Spotlight. And he walks into the room and everybody is in there all on phones talking to people about the abuse they suffered. And it was a well-done movie about a really serious topic without going melodramatic, without making it seem...
Yeah, man. If you think about it, how do you do that? Like, how do you even...
They figured out how to make every one of the newspaper reporters because this is one of the cool parts of this movie, by the way. There's only four people in Spotlight, not counting Michael Keaton. Four people counting Michael Keaton. Every one of them has a story that it ties in. It's all part of this, but they're all doing different things. And the way that it fills out, the way you go from Rachel McAdams talking to specific survivors to Mark Ruffalo trying to get any information he can out of the lawyer that is defending all of these victims,
right.
To the other lawyer who has been a defense attorney but can't actually say anything because some things block him out from it. And like I said, never melodramatic, never overdone. All done really, really well. And this is a well-crafted movie with a deft hand to make subject matter and a situation in a newsroom that you can totally go way over the top with, and kept it at the right level where all of the characters never come off as bad people. They don't come off as being.
Nor do they come off as like Superman, though.
No,
like,
not at all. You actually get a sequence. There's a great sequence where one of the people at Spotlight finds out that it's not a halfway house, but it is basically a halfway house for priests that need to be reformed.
Yeah.
Is right down the road from him, yeah. And he puts up a little thing on his refrigerator for his kids, and it's just a nice little moment where you find out they are real people. They do have real concerns, and yeah, they're not Supermen. They're doing the best job they can to be journalists.
Everything came together in that movie, man. It's in a lot of ways the complete opposite of a Marvel movie or something like that, but it has the construction, the characters, and the subject matter that just nothing has had for a long time. Like, it's one of those confluence of something, ran out of words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that movie a lot.
Too many big words in a row, and I don't have small ones either.
So I like that movie a lot, and that has put a little fire under my bum. And so the next movie I want to watch, I'm hoping to get it done this week. I want to watch The Post.
I was gonna ask. That's literally next. Okay.
Gotta watch it. Gotta check that out.
If you don't have a desire to see, wait. Did you say you already watched the Daniel Ellsberg documentary? Didn't you? We talked about. I want to say you did start to watch that or something. The one I mentioned not too long ago.
Daniel Ellsberg.
There's the Daniel Ellsberg, the most dangerous man in America documentary, and then there was the Robert McNamara documentary. No, we talked about it on the show.
Yeah,
Beth had started.
If I think I said we might have wanted to. I don't remember starting it though.
I don't know. I can't say which one to watch first between that and The Post, actually, but watch them together. They're both. In fact, you know what? Watch the documentary first. I think you'd appreciate The Post better.
Okay.
I did it the other way around and was fine, so whatever. Cool.
Sure.
Hey.
Sure.
I did watch a Marvel movie this week.
Ooh.
It's not one that we need to spend any amount of time on, other than I want to say...
You don't feel very good, Mr. Stark?
No, I didn't watch Infinity War again.
Oh.
But that's a good starting point, actually, because I was going to say, with Marvel movies, I think it's becoming, and I try to be open to this, mm-hmm. but becoming maybe hard to tell when one is better than others. Because I think about, you know, Marvel movies that aren't, you know, like the least Marvel movies, like you'll probably disagree with this one, but the ones you hear the least about.
Dark World.
Yes. Thank you. Dark World was one I was going to mention.
You know who really hates that movie?
Iron Man 2. Who?
Chris Hemsworth.
Does he really?
He really doesn't like that movie.
But again, this is the thing. I watch those movies and I find plenty to enjoy. Like there are plenty of other movies that I dislike more than them. I might have seen all of them more than once already anyways, you know? Like, it doesn't help that my wife is always trying to play a Chris Hemsworth movie, but, you know.
I think I'm finally caught up. The only thing I haven't seen yet is Ant-Man and Wasp.
Yeah, I haven't seen that either, actually.
So.
That might be a show.
When it comes out, I'd probably be down with that because Paul Rudd all day long.
Have we done a Marvel show yet? Yeah, did we?
We haven't.
No,
we actually talked about this, and the reason we didn't do it is because it became. Well, that's not true. We did one on Black Panther.
That's right. Okay. Hey, shoot. Good idea. That was a good. That was maybe our second show. Had to choose one. That might have been it.
Yeah.
It's sometimes hard to trust myself about whether or not one of these movies is good.
Yeah.
And I went back and watched. My wife was out of town, and I wanted something to watch with my daughter, and she loves the Marvel movies. So I was like, well, the one I consistently hear a lot about kind of regardless is The Winter Soldier. Captain America 2,
sure.
I guess is what
yeah.
it is. So I went back and watched that, and it was refreshing to find out that holds up and is distinguishable from the rest of the Marvel movies as a standout.
I can believe that. I remember really loving that. And I mean,
I remember liking it too, but I couldn't have told you why it was better than, you know, even Thor, Dark World or whatever, you know?
I didn't feel like that was a bad, like, I didn't think that was one of those ones that was in the untalked, I kind of thought.
No, I know. Sorry, I'm picking on that one. No, it's, it.
No. I
knew
just
you
mean,
would take issue with it, but.
No, I'm not talking about Dark World. I mean, I didn't ever put Captain America down there. I have always ever.
Yeah, yeah, no. In fact, the Winter Soldier, okay, it might be a battle between that and Civil War, was always one that people talked about as being, you know, top tier Marvel.
Yeah.
And again, I did enjoy it.
Yo, you just didn't know why. You
yeah, I didn't know why. Like I said, it's hard to trust myself in retrospect, maybe more often than not,
sure.
about how some Marvel movies distinguish themselves from others. And I know they're different genres kind of within themselves, which we can talk about the the way Marvel movies have taken over everything, and that's certainly a discussion. You know, like Ant-Man is a freaking heist movie, right?
And I love it.
I don't know what you would call the Winter Soldier. I don't know what genre. Maybe they're
You know what Winter Soldier is for me is Winter Soldier is very much along the lines of like those old Ernest Borgnine movies, things like the Dirty Dozen, like that type of thing, where it's not, you know, I'm not saying it's a one-to-one because nobody's going in on a suicide mission, but they kind of feel like those movies, you know, those movies from the 60s and 70s that were.
I'm not as well versed. I can't. But
they're just like it's a movie like it's a crime movie.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. It's a total thriller. Maybe is that what?
Yeah. I mean, it's like the Dirty Dozen is more of a, you know, it's World War One or World War Two or something. I don't even remember when it takes place. And you know, it's a suicide mission, but it's a crime.
Winter Soldier is legit. Like that is top to bottom a solid movie outside of Marvel movies, no matter what. Like it's got, you know, it's worrying about other extemporaneous movies at the same time. There's a little bit of that in there,
right.
But as a whole, it is really well crafted. The story, it's an action movie, but it's not, you know, overblown by action.
Right.
And when the action does show up, it's fantastic. But it's not the focus. You know, it's surrounded by all this intricate plot that there is mystery. Like you don't know what's going on. And maybe that's increasingly rare for a Marvel movie because things are spelled out in so many different ways in so many different places. But
yeah,
I mean, Infinity War is a good example because while I did like that movie, you kind of never wondered what was going to happen. You know, you never really, maybe that's because
Infinity War is telegraphed 1,000 ways.
Yeah.
From early on when they first show Thanos.
It's kind of a culmination movie more than anything.
It is. And it really, that movie is going to be very much so, I think, informed and looked back upon in a very different light when it's
finished. Second movie. Yeah,
because if the second movie doesn't quite land, that first movie, I think people are going to go back and go, okay, I see what the problems were.
Yeah, sure.
And I mean, I've watched it twice. It's okay. It's a good movie. I like it. It's probably the most fun Marvel movie for a long time for me. But
how long has it been since you saw Winter Soldier?
Oh, it's been a long time. Yeah.
Okay. It's been a long time for me.
But this, like, it's certainly not my favorite Marvel movie.
No.
Probably not. Honestly, Infinity War may not even be in my top five.
I go with that. Like,
but then again, I'm the worst. I'm the worst here because my top two are Thor and Ant-Man.
Right, right.
So,
which Ant-Man, I think in defense. Thor, I don't know if anybody goes with you, but still plenty enjoyable. I don't know if I'm any better. Like, I think I'm Iron Man 3. You might have forgot about this, but Spider-Man Homecoming's in there somewhere.
I did not forget about that. I've been thinking about it all week. I've been
wanting
to rewatch.
Top five.
I want to rewatch it because I've been playing so much Spider-Man on the PS4.
Gotcha. And not that Winter Soldier, when I say it's kind of a one-off, I mean that it stands on its own.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's kind of still a linchpin movie, like within the universe. Like that's where Hydra and the whole like how Hydra was born is fantastic. Like the way that freaking Zola, when he shows up.
Armin Zola.
Yeah, that was so good, the way they worked him in.
I forgot about that.
He explains the birth of Hydra and actually what that, this movie made Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the TV show, one of my favorites. It's still kind of quietly my secret favorite comic book movie on all of TV right now, still. And I'm just barely into the fifth season, which is a little jumpy the sharky because it's out in space for some reason. I haven't got through much of it.
Oh, sure.
But when this movie happened, and the movie based on S.H.I.E.L.D. turned into Hydra, that show became eminently more watchable. So, I mean, it's jumped a few spaces after watching it again. It's in my top five for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I know the original Captain America, the first one, is in my top five. I love that movie.
I love it.
I love that they took it and put it back in the 40s. You know, I love that.
Actually, I love all the ideas about it, maybe a little more than I like the actual movie. Like Hugo Weaving, like Red Skull, like, yeah, the fact that it takes place in the 40s, like all that stuff. I'm like, shoot, this is like every single thing hits. The movie, you know, story, plot in its entirety doesn't quite make top five probably, but
yeah,
I can't disagree with what you say. That's all I got.
That's
all we got.
Hey, thanks for stopping by. Book Club for Movies. We're on Twitter. We're on the Facebook. No, we're not. That's a lie. We're just on Twitter.
Sure we are. Well, on Facebook, it's still, we just use the zero hit points page. Yeah, check it out.
Podcast at bookclubformovies.com. Hit us up there. Don't forget, our Book Club for Movies selection this week is Kodachrome. Thank you very much, Adam Parkin. It's streaming on Netflix. So go and flick your nets and see how you feel about it.
I will. And why don't you tell us about it, and we'll talk about it next week.
All righty.